Welcome to the AquariumMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 121, recorded July 9th, 2012.
Greetings to all you AquariumMaxers out there.
Hello. Hopefully all of you who had a holiday this last week had a good one.
And hopefully those of you who didn't still enjoyed it.
Yes.
I mean, still enjoyed those days.
It's still summer. So, today we are going to be hearing from Juliet in Paris, Mick in Carnforth, Carlos in New York, and us!
Indeed. We have a few things we would like to share with you.
Have a few tidbits. Okay, so last week Juliet was wondering about sponge filters and shrimp. Tell us again what her question was.
Well, she was wondering about... she sent an email to clarify what she meant, and she said she wanted to know if the sponge filters clean the water well, even though they can't suck in particles.
Okay.
Think about...
clean the water, specifically relating to shrimp, like for how dirty shrimp make the water?
I believe that's what she is referring to, yeah.
Okay.
The idea is this. Sponge filters are great filters in a lot of ways. They're great at biofiltration. In other words, that porous foam structure holds a lot of surface area, so...
Surface area.
The bacteria do pretty well there, and so biofiltration-wise, they're very good. They do pick up small particles of detritus as well, but very fine ones, mm-hmm. and that's what you squeeze out, and you're squeezing out partly detritus and partly bacteria biomass and so on when you're squeezing that out in a situation where you're cleaning it. So they do suck in a little bit, but they don't remove a lot of particles from the water in comparison to, say, a mechanical hang-on-the-back filter.
Okay, because it looks like what she's wondering about is she put her shrimp into a 20-gallon
mm-hmm.
and has a sponge in there. But if she moves something around, like a piece of wood or whatnot, there's a whole bunch of detritus, all kinds of goop
right.
under there that obviously isn't getting picked up by the sponge filter.
Right.
And so she says she wanted to know if the debris can cause bad fluctuations in the water quality. And she says, I think that is what happened in the Nano. A sponge filter, lots of vegetable matter and poop accumulating at the bottom despite regular water changes and very small amounts of food being given. And she does say she can't gravel vacuum because of the baby shrimp and because it's a mostly planted tank. So she's not able to get the goo out that way.
Right. And that is a bit of a sticky wicket. It's a problem that can be difficult to solve because it's true that the you don't want to vacuum too aggressively when you've got baby shrimp in there and heavily planted tanks. You can't really get down into the gravel if you've got a lot of plant roots down there that you disturb by mm-hmm. digging around in the gravel with a gravel vac. So those are some issues. A couple of things you can do, though, to help. I do gravel back in a tank with shrimp, but there are certain precautions you have to take. I mean, you can't do it with a python hooked up to the sink if you are worried about losing baby shrimp. But you can, for example, use a fairly fine or narrow bore hose and siphon it into a bucket and then just check it for baby shrimp.
And just net them back into the tank.
Which is, you know, it's frustrating, it's time-consuming,
it's
pain, but if you do it periodically, it can help reduce that. And I have resorted to that on occasion.
How narrow of a tube? Like, more like airline tubing narrow, or...?
Well, I've used anything up to, you know, just a standard gravel back, I guess. But if you want, you can use rigid airline, the really narrow eighth-inch stuff.
Uh-huh.
You can use that and hooked up to normal airline tubing that you'd use in an air pump. And just carefully vacuum around and watch out for baby shrimp and just suck up detritus and make sure you don't get gravel.
While, huh?
It'd be a lot harder if you had sand because that would be sucking mm-hmm. sand up. But if you just have gravel in there, you could do that and periodically, and that can help. That's something that I've done.
Or she can use a slightly bigger one.
Yeah.
And get the gunk out faster, but just do it into a bucket.
And then make sure you net out any shrimp. Yeah, and I've done that without any apparent harm to the shrimp.
They can just take a water slide.
In fact, that's the first way we found out that we had baby shrimp years and years ago when we first started breeding them. You spotted them, actually.
Did I? I don't even remember that.
Because I was siphoning out that tank in my office in Hawaii, and everybody was along for the ride and siphoning it out, and you said, you've got a little shrimp in this bucket. And I thought, oh, it must be, you know, a scud, an amphipod, uh-huh. because I had amphipods in the tank, and they are shrimpy.
Uh-huh.
I thought, oh, it must be that, and I said that out loud, and you said, no, this one looks different. So we looked at it, and it was a teeny baby red cherry shrimp.
That's funny.
So, and soon we found out we had a lot of them. So one idea that you can use, because too much of that debris certainly can contribute to poor water quality. There's a balance to be struck with, you know, the plants that are growing and how much nutrients they're using out of the water and different things, but it can certainly contribute. So maybe that'll help.
Okay. Do we have any other ideas for her?
Well, she also wanted to know if the bottom stuff could also not be a health issue, and it's more about nitrates in the water and that the bacteria are handling them. Well, there are people who take that... take that twist on it, and they really don't bother about the detritus at the bottom, and they just make sure that they do water changes and that the plants are keeping the water clean and so on. So if you're keeping up on water change, it is possible to just leave your substrate alone, but if a lot of it's building up, I think in my case I would generally tend to remove it. I mean, I do have tanks where I hardly ever play with the substrate, but typically they're tanks with high plant biomass and low bioload, like the one I have in my office.
Uh-huh.
I tested that one the other day, and I haven't played with the substrate in there for months, really, months. Maybe just a little bit off the top, but I haven't dug around in it at all. And it's got quite a lot of plant growth in there. Zero ammonia, of course. I tested nitrates to see what was going on there. There were about 5 parts per million, which I think is a little high, actually. I was surprised. Not that that's high, dangerous high, but
high for what it
high for
is.
What I expected it to be, but then I realized I had just pruned a whole bunch of plant material out, so less plant material than usual, and that may account for it. But anyway, you know, there's a really low bioload in there, just
what
a few shrimp.
In that one?
There's one olive nerite, a few wild cherry shrimp, wild color variety mm-hmm. cherry shrimp, and a couple of African dwarf frogs, and that's it. And then plants. Oh, and some MTS. Malaysian trumpet snail.
Oh.
And that's it. And there's quite a bit of plant material in there, and so it works out okay. But if you have, you know, a higher bioload and you have more detritus accumulating, then you either... I would remove it personally. I think it's better to do it, but it is hard to do that vacuuming, so just maybe try those tips and hopefully they'll help a little bit. She's wondering how she can get one of those crystal clear shrimp tanks that you see out there, especially when people are giving them leaves to eat, because in her experience, the dead leaves disintegrate into brown specks and they stay on the gravel forever. And her tanks tend to be healthy and the shrimp are breeding in general, but they have some grunge and green in places where she would not like them. She would just like to have a tank like that in the movies. So, she's also wondering if Carlos had any ideas about her fat, non-laying female betta.
Oh, yeah, did we hear from him on that? Okay, well, let's talk about how to get a crystal clear tank first.
Well, I think that my shrimp tanks tend to look better if I use a gravel vac periodically, and just like I was saying.
Like we were talking about.
But let's open that up to other shrimp keepers. Mick, for example, what do you do? What's your regimen? How do your tanks look in terms of detritus on the bottom and so on? So let's see what other shrimp keepers have to say about Juliet's question. And I don't think Carlos has had a chance to respond yet to Juliet's question about her betta, but so hopefully we'll get to that soon.
Okay. We'll hear from him eventually.
Okay. Thank you, Juliet. And we hope that helps a little, and we hope that it will lead to more help in the future.
So, we are on to Mick's email. He has a funny pun for us. He says, better than expected.
Better?
Better.
B-E-T-T-A?
Yeah.
Better than expected. I like that.
Says, just got the latest show a day earlier than normal here in the UK.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, because
it was,
you serendipitously released it a day early on accident.
Because it was going to be the July 4th the next
4th
day,
July
and
here.
I got sort of... confused, and it was good because we were very busy on the 4th of July.
Yes.
So,
and of course, it was the 4th of July everywhere else too, but that's also Independence
it's
Day.
It's Independence
here,
Day
so.
Here, and that's why it was significant
yes.
to us. So,
the rest of the world doesn't skip from the 3rd to the 5th.
Right. But so I released it on Tuesday, and it's a good thing I did because it might not have worked mm-hmm. on the 4th. There you go.
He says, I had a great surprise earlier this week when I spotted 6 baby betta rubra.
Rubra.
Sorry.
Mm-hmm. That's okay.
In my paludarium. I got a small group of juveniles from a friend about 3 months ago and just put them into the paludarium water to grow on. I thought I saw a tiny fry of some sort a few weeks ago, but couldn't be sure. They seem to be around a quarter inch long and are now out with the others when I feed and are taking small worms and flake. They have survived with no special care of foods, but must have got enough to eat from the natural infusoria and stuff that will be there on the plants and bogwood. We'll try and get a video up on my YouTube channel later this week.
Cool.
That's pretty cool.
It's fun when you get serendipitous fry.
Now, tell me what a betta rubra is again.
It's one of the mouth-pooting bettas.
Oh, that he talked about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, not the...
Alrighty.
Well, we talked about a couple different species, I guess, that he'd done, and that's one of them, so... Okay.
What does rubra mean?
It relates to the color red.
They're just red. Doesn't have to do with mouth brooding. It just has to do with the color.
Right.
Okay. There are other mouth brooding betas that are called something else?
Oh, yes. Many, many species.
Okay. It looks like he sent us some new YouTube videos from his fish room.
Yes.
So we're going to put those
up? We're going to put those up on the show page. Thank you, Mick. Mm-hmm. He's going to describe what those are a little bit. He has described that, right?
Yeah, he's got a white pearl snowball shrimp female with eggs.
Cool.
He does say that he would be happy to do an interview on shrimp, keeping and breeding shrimp. We were talking about that before.
Yes, we talked about that last week
so
a bit.
We'll need to get that set up.
Yeah, we'll look forward to doing that.
But in the meantime, he sends a 3-point teaser. Says, 1, get a nice 5 to 10 gallon tank, which is cycled, and add some bogwood and plants. 2, get 10 to 20 cherry shrimp and acclimate them to the tank. 3, in 6 months, start advertising all the additional shrimp for sale. Super easy. That's all you gotta do.
Easy to learn, perhaps difficult to master, though. And so we'll need his masterful
tips.
Yes,
I was joking.
Oh, I know. It is easy in a sense, but it's difficult to master when you're getting into more subtleties like the things that Julia was mentioning.
Right.
So he will help us with that.
Okay. Now, who was it that was asking about the vertical splitting and
that was Julia.
Too. Okay, because Mick responded and he said he's never had that happen. The only issues he's had is the Sakura parasite, and he decided not to keep that strain since he was thinking that the inbreeding that they do to get the brighter coloration weakens the shrimp as a result, so he decided just not to keep those ones. Has anybody else had any of the vertical splitting and dying?
If you have, please chime in.
I mean, it almost sounds like a molt gone wrong, you know?
Oh, definitely sounds like a molt gone wrong.
Okay, not even almost.
Not
See,
even
there's
almost.
Me putting in almost. I put almost in all the time. Almost all the time. Okay. So if anybody else has some ideas on how to make molt better, I guess, what would you say?
Well,
any more calcium?
My thing is, you know, if I know that people have talked about iodine and iodide and so on quite a bit. And in my personal experience, they have benefited from the regular inclusion of sushi nori, raw sushi nori without the oil or anything, just the sheets. Put a small bit of that in every week or so.
You can get it at health food stores or...
Right. At least here you can.
Market.
I don't know if you can get that everywhere. But I use the organic stuff because the other stuff can have cadmium and other heavy metals in it, which of course are... But I don't know about cadmium specifically for shrimp, but heavy metals in general, bad news for shrimp. Mm-hmm. So if you get the organic stuff, it's better. Anyway, that has been really helpful for me in helping shrimp molt successfully. But I've already told Julia about that, so
okay.
I don't think that's her issue particularly.
Alrighty. Oh, Mick mentions he has another video, too, that we'll also put up about the crib fry.
Cool.
That are growing really well, and they're eating grindleworms now. He says they will, however, show their ambitious side and try to take on the odd white worm, too. They're around a quarter of an inch long, the normal coloration ones seem about 10% larger than the albinos.
Well, that's some definitely audacious fry because white worms can get to be like an inch long.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
If these quarter-inch fish are trying to take them on, wow.
Yeah,
I mean,
I
not all of them are
something
that big.
Four times as long as me.
Me neither. I guess they're not always that big you know, white worms can be smaller too, obviously juvenile white worms and so on, but still, it's pretty big.
That's ambitious. So
that'll be fun to see. Thank you for sending the videos, Mick.
Yeah, we'll get those up. He was talking about his infusoria recipe. He says, I got my culture from a fellow aquarist at my fish club and fed it on gram flour, topping it up with good tank water as I fed. I have seen cultures for sale on eBay, so perhaps that's a starting point, too.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Graham flour, like, that you would make graham crackers out of?
I think that's the idea. Have you ever seen that
Where
at the health food store?
Where do you get that?
Because I've looked for it.
I don't think so.
I have never seen it. Maybe somebody knows of a good source for it, because I think in the U.S.
it's get it online.
A little harder to get than it might be in the U.K. I'm not sure.
Could you crumble up graham crackers?
I don't know. That's a good question. But
I guess that's got more than just graham flour in it. It's got sugar, too.
If anybody knows of a good source for that, let us know, because that sounds like a good way to do it. And I like the idea of eBay, and probably Aquabid would have some, too, so that might be a good source for Anne, for her little ram fry.
Yeah. It says, I have put a couple of pictures of my paludarium on here, as I have just been doing some pruning in there as things were getting a little overgrown.
And thanks for those, too. We'll put those on the show page as well. All right. Thanks, Mick.
Thank you, Mick.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629, or just email us at info@aquarimax.com. And now, back to the Aquarimax Audio Show, the podcast with Icy Nut.
Okay, so we're going to hear from us now on a couple of things.
Indeed. Well, the first thing was, this beta project we've been attempting to embark on with our kids, their science projects, breeding bettas. And so far, the male that we purchased is not very interested in building a bubble nest.
He's a little romantically challenged.
He'll blow the odd bubble here and there, and he's started a couple of times, but they've been really pathetic bubble nests.
And he's super interested in her.
He is. He displays for her and flares for her and goes to her and then over to his nest site frequently, as if he's trying to lure her over there, but just nothing. So we emailed Carlos about it, and he said that he'd had this problem on numerous occasions, and some males just seem a bit lazy at first. Seeing another male might help, because I asked about that, but I don't think it would be necessary. As long as he seems to have started a nest and the female seems eager to get out of her jar, it should be okay to go ahead and release her. Most of the lazy males will add more bubbles so that the female gets close to it, and then turn around and swim away as if to say, you're going to have to do better than that. I've had at least 25% of attempts not go well on the first try. Sometimes they just coexist for about a week, very platonically, and then I remove her, condition them further for about a week, and reintroduce her. Seems that some males don't know what they've got till they're gone. So, thank you. That helps. And we are going to try several things. We tried, we were at the stage, taking your advice, where we remove the female and put her back in. Mm-hmm. So we're going to wait a couple more days, because she's been separated for 3 or 4 days. Wait a couple more days, and then we're going to put them back in, and put her back in and see what happens. So, thank you.
Did we get Carlos pictures up yet of the fish?
I don't think we have. We got a few good ones, so hopefully we'll have a chance to put some of those up.
He's pretty.
He's a pretty fish.
He's a nice pretty fish.
Yeah.
Just a little clueless.
Yeah. That's what happens sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we've got some tips, too, that we'd like to share with everybody. Shall we do that?
Yes. You have something to tell us about vinegar.
I do. Okay. Well, I think most aquarists, or many at least, know that vinegar can be a useful cleaning agent when used properly. It can also be dangerous, of course. You don't want to go dumping a bunch of vinegar in your aquarium, because you'll have pH fluctuations and all kinds of things, and acetic acid is scary. But, it can be a problem. At any rate, for cleaning an aquarium, the outside of an aquarium or the inside of an aquarium in which there are no fish or other creatures at the moment, a dry aquarium, or cleaning it out, vinegar can be extremely useful. However, how many of you have ever sprayed vinegar on some hard water deposits, waited for them to dissolve, and then tried to scrub them off and realized they weren't dissolving very well. Okay, I'm looking at all those raised hands. You see those?
No, you're listening to all the raised hands. We can't see them.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, this is something that I will not claim as my own because it's not my own. It's in various spots on the internet, but I somehow had just not encountered it until recently, and I was looking for something to do to clean out some plastic critter carrier type containers. I had a number of them that I had to clean out, and they had hard water deposits on them. And so I was researching for this, and I found that if you get a paper towel, like one of the soft absorbent ones, not like a school paper towel.
Like, you know, a good expensive paper towel.
Yeah, one of the really absorbent fluffy ones. You get it and pour white vinegar on it, and then you just sort of plaster it against the place where...
So is it pretty soaked?
It's soaked, yeah, it's saturated.
Dripping?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you just kind of plaster it over the place that you want to clean and leave it there for like an hour, 2 hours, something like that. When you do, depending on the severity of the scale of hard water deposits, either all of it will come off with a little gentle rubbing, mm-hmm. or most of it will come off and you'll leave another one and you need to reapply.
Okay.
But then, you know, you do that a couple times and it'll completely come off. But without a lot of rubbing and with much less scratching than any other method I know of. And, you know, this is economizing, because I suppose you could fill up that 5-gallon tank with vinegar and let it sit there for a couple of hours, but
that's
who has that much vinegar.
Vinegar
laying around, and who would want to do that, you know?
Because then what do you do with it afterwards?
Exactly. So the paper towel does a lot of the work for you if it just sits there with the vinegar on it.
Holds it there.
Right. And so
that's nice.
I used it to clean out several of the critter carrier things that I had at work, and wow, I was really pleased with the results.
He was very excited. He actually went and did our shower door this way, too, because he was so excited about it.
Oh, I haven't yet.
Oh,
I'm
no,
planning on
but
it.
You keep talking about it. He's yeah. going to do our shower door this way.
Because, you know, there's that soapy scale that sometimes just doesn't come off very well, no matter what you use. So this seems to be a good way to do it. Actually, I'm going to do something else with the shower door. I'm going to do the next thing I'm going to talk about. Yeah.
So...
Not going to do the paper towel thing.
Never mind.
but that brings
Don't
me to the next
to
thing
me.
That I'm going to do. The next thing I'm going to do is the Magic Eraser.
Magic Erasers. Now, if you haven't seen them, Magic Eraser is the brand name that is put out by the Mr. Clean cleaning stuff, cleaning series.
Cleaning company,
cleaning
brand.
Cleaning company, brand, thing, mission, right. quest, thing.
Right, and it's melamine foam is what it is.
You can get them generic. They look like just kind of white foam rectangles.
Blocks. Fine foam.
Yeah.
Fine sponges, sort of. But they're not really sponges. On the molecular level, or, well, I shouldn't say that. On a microscopic level, they look like lattices of these little fibers. But anyway, they're quite tough compared to a normal sponge. So they're kind of like really super fine grit sandpaper.
And they actually sell them for taking... like crayon and pen and things off of walls that your kids decorate.
Right. And there are several different kinds. Some of them have some sort of cleaning agents embedded in them, so don't get those. That would be bad news. But the original, there's one called Original that doesn't have any chemicals in it,
just
except for the chemicals used to make the stuff and the melamine foam. And basically, you can clean off hard water stains from several things with it, including glass. Now, I'm not saying you should necessarily do this, but this is what I've done, okay? I had an aquarium that was kind of... we had raised vernal pool organisms in it, so hard water stains had built up on the sides, okay? And I had put it in the garage and kind of not done anything with it for a long time. And I took it out and used a couple of small blocks that I cut off of one of these magic erasers with water and with vinegar... And just gently...
Water and vinegar mixed together?
Yeah. And just gently rubbed these hard water stains. And they came off the glass.
You didn't do the paper towel thing on that one?
I didn't.
Maybe you're going to get to that, different applications of the paper towel and the magic eraser.
Okay. Well, yeah, I will. But...
Just two different ways to...
You saw it, though. You saw the tank, right? Before and after. Do you remember?
Probably. I don't remember that.
You may not remember specifically because I'm always doing stuff like this, but
yeah.
You were surprised when I showed it to you.
Okay.
Or at least you pretended to be out of courtesy. I don't know. But at any rate, it looked good. Much better. It looked amazingly better. It looks like a new tank.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you saw it. You know, it looks much better. It doesn't look like an old tank.
The one with the dividers in it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, yeah. Yes.
And so... it looks a lot better, and it didn't scratch the glass or anything that I can detect. But it really did a good job at removing that hard water scale. So it was cool.
And what about acrylic?
Okay. Some people say that it can be used on acrylic. I don't have any direct experience using it on an acrylic tank, so I can't really comment there. But I can say that I wouldn't use it on the critter carrier type cheap plastic because I tried that.
And it's all scratched.
Yeah, I used one tank as a guinea pig because I have a million of them at work. And used one and it didn't come out so pretty.
Okay. So you could do the vinegar and paper towel things on the critter keepers, that right. kind of plastic things.
Right.
And either one of them will work on glass and possibly acrylic.
Yes, although I just can't directly comment on acrylic, but and the research that I've done, there are many, many people who do it with success.
Would the magic eraser be better if it's really caked on? Or let it sit there with a paper towel and then scrub it with a magic eraser, you know, if it's really not coming off? Or
I don't know. That's a good question. I'd probably spray it down with vinegar or something and let it sit for a while first.
With the paper towel, that's what I'm saying.
If it were really caked on, yeah.
Yeah. And then scrub it with a magic eraser.
Yeah.
So you could put the two of them together if you had a really difficult case.
Yeah, why not?
Okay, and I think you had one more tip for us today, right?
Okay. Yes, I did. This is just sort of simple, but it's fun. I like it anyway. Okay, I've got several Daphnia cultures, way more than I should admit to right now.
Your Daphnia habit.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is I've got a couple of just small backup cultures, emergency backup cultures, sort of. Well, I use them for conditioning our bettas right now because they're in the same room, and they're just one in a gallon jar and one is in a half-gallon jar. Okay. I've been taking to leaving a drinking straw sitting astride one of the jars, and I just cap the top with my finger, with a little straw, reach it down in there, you know, full of air, mm-hmm. and put it in front of a couple of Daphnia, and then let go with my finger, and then put my finger back, and it just, you know, it
kind
draws...
Kind of quickly.
Yeah, and it draws the Daphnia up into the straw, right.
And then they're stuck there.
And then they're stuck there. So I get four or five Daphnia and drop them in for the fish, and then I go back and do it again for a different fish, and it's really an easy way to do it, because you can manage, to a large extent, the number of Daphnia if you just want to feed a couple
feed
of fish.
Could you target feed with that, too?
See, that's what I've been thinking. You could target feed fish to some extent with
like
that.
If you're training a fish?
Yeah, if you're training a fish. Not so much if you're trying to feed one fish to the exclusion of others. I don't think it would work as well that way.
Why not?
Which is sometimes how target training is sometimes used. But if you've got 17 fish in the tank and you want to get the Daphnia to that one fish, the straw is not going to guarantee that that's going to work.
Why? So why would a normal target feeder work better for the feeding of one fish to the exclusion of other as opposed to a straw?
Well, it depends on what kind of target feeder, because there are several out there. But some of them have a bulb which allows you to sort of jet food towards a particular corner or something. So if, say, you have a shy fish that lives under a rocky overhang, mm-hmm. and you can use it's basically a really long pipette with a bulb on the end. And you get some bloodworms or something in there, or some mysis shrimp or whatever it is, and you just squeeze it under the rocky overhang where other fish aren't hanging out, uh-huh. that can work. And it might be 24 inches long,
okay.
you know, so that's one thing. But just using a drinking straw that way is not going to work. See
right.
what I mean?
Okay.
Because you can't jet the food towards anything.
It's harder to aim.
Right. It's harder to aim. It's not as long, and fish are going to recognize it. And the most aggressive feeders in the tank are going to recognize it just as well as the fish you want to feed, so they'll just come up and nick the Daphnia.
Why don't they recognize the other target feeder?
Oh, they probably do.
But since it's just easier to aim and get it right where you want
to. It's easier to aim and get it where you want and so on. Yeah, it's not something that's going to be right at the surface of the water either. So
okay.
with the other target feeders, you can feed all the other fish up at the surface, and they swarm up to the surface and are eating food, and you slip this down the other side of the tank and feed the fish. You know?
Okay.
Straw is just not as versatile because it's not as long. But it's nice for just giving, you know, you've got a half a dozen bettas that you want to give a few Daphnia to every day, and it's a pretty convenient way to do it, something like that. That's all I wanted to say about that.
Okay.
So... Yeah.
That's all I got to say about that.
Yeah, so a couple of tips that we've noticed lately. And
go get some drinking straws and suck up things with them.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's about it for now. So we hope that you all have a lovely week, and please continue to send us your questions and comments and so on. If you'd like to be interviewed on Aquaramax, then... contact us about that too. If you have a particular species you'd like to highlight, or a particular aquarium experience, anything like that,
we'll get on getting another interview with Mick.
Yeah, we will. And anyone else who'd be interested in doing something like that. So thank you for joining us.
May the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.